Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 326 of the More Than Just Code podcast. My name is Tim Mitter, and I'm in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined once again by Jaime Lopez Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
And Mark Rubin down in San Jose, California.
Oop.
Alrighty. So, yeah, here we are. I guess we'll just start off with a fact check. Last time we were talking about, I said many moons, and I always was under the impression that many moons meant days, but in fact, Mark and Jaime were correct. I did check it out. Many moons ago is an old-fashioned expression that means means a long time ago, but moons generally refers to months, which is where the word month comes from. It's an expression meaning, you know, it's just literal, it says here, but I think it means that it's moons, like months. And the other thing too, so another point is I want to sort of, you know, do a shout out to Charles Geschke, you know, one of the founders of Adobe, along with John Warnock, you know, ex of Xerox PARC, those whole crew of people. Carol and I were actually at a Macworld Boston and we were invited to an offsite Adobe event, and it turned out, which I knew about, it turned out to be they were introducing, they'd been working on a product called K2, which, you know, the Mountain K2, which was meant to be a Quark Express killer, which was the front runner in page layout production on Macs, and I don't think it was on Windows at that point, but they introduced InDesign, which is what K2 became. But at that keynote, before they introduced Adobe InDesign, it was the day that Dr. Chuck Geschke announced his retirement, and the reason I'm bringing him up today is that he passed away last Friday, so rest in peace. And for me, PostScript was a huge thing. I always, you know, people post those things on Twitter, and they say, you know, what was your first programming language and whatever, and I often think HyperCard was, but I forgot until this morning that PostScript actually was my gateway drug into being a software developer, because I used to be in print production, and we used to do prepress, it's called, and we used to do output to film image setters, and the PostScript file used to always mess up on our we used to get extra pieces of film coming out, you know, which was expensive back then, and so we used to have to grab the PostScript file before we sent it to the printer, and then, you know, rather than just print directly to the printer, we'd grab the PostScript file, edit it in a text editor, and remove the unwanted pages. And so editing PostScript was my introduction to the magic that is software development. Thanks again to Chuck Geschke and John Warnock for the invention of PostScript. This show wouldn't be on the air right now if it wasn't for them. There you go. Alrighty, and we have an Ask MTJC sort of, Jaime?
We do. It looks like you and Sean Marston were talking about, I'll just read it literally here. Real-time follow-up, 27-inch iMac has a 5K screen. I had one.
Yeah, and so the discussion was around, I mean, and again, this is, I sort of tweeted to him in the conversation that this is the danger dangers of reading a web page live on a podcast is that when you guys were talking about the devices and you went on to something else, and I went over to the Apple site and grabbed the first page that came across me and misread it, that said that, you know, that I misread that, that there was in fact a 5K screen on the current iMacs, right, the ones that are shipping now, because I didn't go to like the comparison page, I went to the single unit page. So anyway, he was right, I was wrong. That's why we have follow-up, right?
Indeed. Yes. And it's tough because these things change over time, and I'm guessing you probably often look at the Canadian store, and there's so many caveats, but it's good to get it out there, because now that we've seen that, I like, kind of vaguely remember that there was a 5K.
But well, there was that iMac Pro, right? The sort of space gray, brown, black, you know, and it had the keyboard and the black mouse or black trackpad and blackish trackpad. And that one definitely had a 4K when it, or 5K when it first came out, right? And yeah, and I guess they must have brought them down, because Mark always wanted, on his wish list was always a 5K Apple display, right?
Yeah, I always wanted an upgraded Thunderbolt display, but it never actually happened. Never came.
Alrighty, moving along in our follow-ups, we were also talking about, Jaime and I were talking about the challenge of using international keyboards. So I found this site on Apple's website that talks about how to identify keyboard localizations. And sadly, Jaime, like, so the return key that you and I were talking about was the one that's like double high and narrow, and so you end up hitting the wrong keys. But it turns out that the American style return key is not that popular if you look at all these different keyboards that are there, right? You know, Belgian, and they're in alphabetical order by country sort of thing, right? So they go all the way down. I think it's near the very end is where you get to the US one. So I guess it's pretty common for a return key to be tall and thin, right?
Now, I've used keyboards like that here in the US with a tall return key like that.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure the Selectric typewriter used to have a key like that. Remember those?
Sort of.
The IBM, the big IBM ones, you know, yeah. the ball that spun around.
Yeah. And, yeah. I sort of remember them.
Yeah. Like, we had one. I don't know what it must have got rid of it when we moved at one point, but they were super expensive. People, they used to steal them, like they were, you know, $5,000-$6,000 or whatever to buy them, right? So it was a big market in black market electric typewriters. But yeah.
This is actually pretty fascinating. And yes, so I scrolled way down. Well, first I looked in the B's for British, but no, it's English Great Britain is the keyboard layout that is very unfamiliar to me. There is English International with a Z, which is interesting. And then just plain English, which I think is the American one, just looking very, very cursory glance at the layout.
Yeah, because the Canadian keyboard and the US keyboard are similar. The French Canadian keyboard is different because they have extra accents, but our keyboard that we use in Canada English is similar. I believe it's the same layout as the US one. Yeah, the English, what they've got, they're calling English here, right?
Yeah, no. So I mean, I have one of those in front of me right now, and I can confirm that, yes, the one that says English is the US one, because like I said, it's right in front of me right now.
Yeah, and of course I looked at, like, all right, as far as I know, the symbol for the Canadian dollar is the same as the American dollar, so I didn't expect it to be there. And I said,
ours is a beaver, come on.
Well, there's tree. French and French Canadian. I said, what would be the difference? Is it, well, okay, one is probably like euros versus dollars, I would guess.
Maybe.
For the French Canadian one.
Oh, is there French and French Canadian right beside each other? Okay, French, let's have a look, quick look here.
But yeah, the
The Canadian one has an extra U on it.
A longer U. It's got an extra two U keys.
Yeah.
True. I have used French keyboards before. It's an adjustment.
Turkey has two. There's a Turkey keyboard and a Turkish keyboard. That is.
Oh, really? Wow.
Interesting there. There's some, I'm sure there must be some funny history behind the way some of these break out. I'll make a call back to way, probably, 5 years ago now, when I accidentally was sent by our IT folks or Apple itself, I never was able to figure it out, was accidentally sent one of the Arabic keyboards.
Oh, wow.
Which, thankfully, it was a pretty easy thing to just ship it back and get a new one sent. But it was entertaining to see a keyboard that had symbols on it I understood, and also symbols I did not understand.
Fascinating. Yeah. Have you ever seen anybody enter, like, kanji or any of the sort of Asian-type fonts?
Yeah, with the input method editor, IME. It's very fascinating.
Yeah. Cool. Right. Enough about that. We were also talking last time about the... I had heard that Apple got nominated for a couple of Academy Awards, which is coming up next weekend, I think. In fact, yeah, their TV, the movie Wolfwalkers and Greyhound, which Jaime and I at least have seen, were both nominated for Academy Awards. So it could be interesting to see if Apple wins an Academy Award. Who goes up to select it, collect it?
Yeah, I mean, if you're subscribed to Apple TV Plus, I think you absolutely should watch these two movies. If you only had to choose one of the two because you somehow don't have that much time, I think watching Wolfwalkers is probably better. I think it is more legitimately a contender for Best Animated Feature than some of the others. No slight against Soul, which is probably going to win. I just think this was such a beautiful movie where every cell is like a storybook that you might read to a child. You could just take one of those frames, put it in a children's book, and it would look, you know, just as good the entire time. So it's great. And I also do recommend Greyhound. It's Tom Hanks. It's a fun, you know, tense thriller, you know, destroyer versus a World War II destroyer versus a submarine.
Submarine, yeah.
And the sound is actually really good. I mean, I'm not surprised that it won that because they have to do a lot of cool things with the sonar acoustics and et cetera. So it's definitely good.
It was a good movie, surprisingly. Yeah. And then next, we also talked about Siri, and Apple has added some gender-neutral Siri voices. I don't know. Did we not talk about that a while back?
Oh, we did talk about that, no?
Yeah, no, but this is a relatively new story.
It's one of those things where, you know, 14.5 is the, I guess, spoilers for the rest of the show, but like, it was the never going to actually ship point release that it looks like it's coming in 14.5, which is imminent now. I've been waiting for 14.5 for months. It might be like 3 or 4 months now. But yeah, it'll be good to see those new voices and see what those are like.
Yeah, but I definitely think a year or two ago we talked about something along the lines of maybe the Mac speech synthesizer having a, you know, general neutral intonations, right? Interesting stuff. Do we want to talk about LG quitting smartphones? Do we care?
Only in a very quick, you know,
sure.
pour out a beer for the fallen of LG, which if folks are wondering, you know, why did LG get out of the market? I'll remind you, and granted, my information is out of date, but for a very long time, Apple and Samsung combined had something like 110% of the profits. You say, wait a minute, Lopez, how can they have more than 100% of the profits? It's because everybody else was losing money, like hand over fist in the mobile market. So Apple had something like 90%+ of the profit, and then Samsung, do the math, is like 15%-ish more. So I'm not surprised that after a very long time, LG just probably quits. It's just, you know, losing money. There's no sense.
Like 1995, it says here they started, right? So that's quite a while.
Yeah, I had an LG flip phone, which was brilliant. It was like the Sunshine or something. It was great for the time. But
I think I had that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys didn't have the Motorola, or was that not a choice?
StarTAC.
Never owned a Motorola Razr.
Motorola had one of the first flip
StarTAC,
phones too.
Yeah, StarTAC was the really early flip phone.
Yeah, yeah.
And they actually did name it after Star Trek because it kind of had that communicator kind of. Oh yeah. Was no accident.
Really? Yeah. Yeah. No, I had some friends who had those ones too, for sure. Yeah, and we did talk about this coming soon. Apple, Amazon, and I thought Google too was also involved in this coming together to the partnership for home automation, not specifically for HomeKit, but yeah, they're talking about having devices that talk to each other. The Zigbee Alliance, I think we talked about that a few episodes ago, right? So devices that will use a shared sort of style. Maybe the AirTags will work with them too, but just hypothesizing. So what do you think about that? I mean, I love the fact that I've, you know, got 27 different standards of home automation in my house right now.
I mean, I think it's good that there is a standard that's seeing some fruit, right? Because there's, if this was a video, you would smash cut to the XKCD, you know, there should be a standard and now there's 15 standards sort of comic. It is good to see that there is a standard that is bearing some fruit because, as you pointed out, it's very silly to have all these different isolated islands of devices that only work in certain ecosystems. We are able to communicate in, you know, a very coordinated and standards-based way because of the beauty of, you know, pick your flavor of TCP/IP, HTTP, other tons of protocols that are standardized, everybody follows. I think it's nice to see the industry for Internet of Things and, you know, home automation stuff start to consolidate around this because there's no real strong advantage anymore to having your own little silo. It's actually better if everybody everybody's devices can work seamlessly. So this is a huge win from my standpoint.
I mean, like, you know, we're an Apple-centric house, so we have, you know, all of our HomeKit stuff, and we have a bunch of HomePods and whatever. And yet I have a Nest doorbell, and then the only reason I have a Google Home in the basement is to announce when somebody's at the front door, you know? And I did subscribe to the service to get the feed stored on the cloud. And then we have an Amazon to tell us when the Amazon packages have arrived or where the shipments are or what's in them, right, kind of thing. So it's kind of crazy that I have to have three different standards and, you know, three different subscriptions to basically automate my house. And thankfully, all the lights and everything are either controlled through, or either they have built-in timers or they're controlled through HomeKit, right? So it's annoying. Anyway, all right. So speaking of things coming together, the Swift.org people have, Apple and I guess the Swift.org people have now introduced another nice little feature into the Swift language, or standard library, I guess, is they added Swift algorithms, which we talked about before, and I believe we talked about Swift numerics, but now they've added Swift collections, which, you know, if you're doing a technical interview, will make it really easy for you to talk about how to get things in and out of arrays and sets and dictionaries, right? Because now they've got this DQ, or pronounced DEC. I read it as DQ, but DEC, that basically allows you to enter things into arrays. You know, normally we would append things into arrays or insert at a key point. Now you can prepend items into arrays as well as append them. And you can pop the first and pop the last off as well, off an array too, which is kind of cool. And then they've got, I believe they ordered sets as well. So now you can have a set of things. And a set is unique values, right?
Correct. But unordered. Yeah. There's no guaranteed order to a set in the standard plain vanilla set.
Right. Whereas an array might have an order, right? Or does have an order. But so, yeah. Definitely so now you can order. Now you can basically build an ordered set, and you know that when you put 1, 2, 3 items into it, they're going to come out in 1, 2, 3 order, right?
And hopefully the rollout of those will be better than the rollout of ordered sets on Objective-C. Raise your hand if you remember.
Still waiting for those?
No.
I've used ordered set in Objective-C. What was the rollout you're talking about?
When they first came out, they were horrible. They basically just didn't work right. They were just a big mess. It got fixed fairly quickly. But like the very first version when they came out, they just didn't work at all. So you would try to use them and try to get the ordered values, and nope, sorry.
Orders are not guaranteed in my ordered set.
Orders are not guaranteed. Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Kind of a mess.
You can query a sort ordered set with contains to find out, you know, if a value exists or not. You can append. I'm not sure why they're saying append in. Is append here inserts? Oh, false at index 0. Mm. That's confusing. Anyway, also ordered dictionaries. Yay, ordered dictionaries. Again, dictionaries, again, no guarantee of orders when things come out of a dictionary, but now you can put things in an ordered dictionary and know that, like, for instance, an example here they've got is some network results, you know, 200, 400, 403, and 404 will come out in the order in which you put them in there, so, which is kind of cool. And then the article goes on a bit deeper into, I don't know if you guys have read more into it than that.
It would have been nice if they talked about some of the trade-offs, right? So they are talking about how you get these speed increases, which is great, but there's got to be something like, presumably the DEC is just like a double-ended ordered, what do they call it? A double directional or a linked list?
Double-ended queue would be what I would call it, but I understand it's a whole right. phrase. So that's why they chose DEC.
Right. But the implementation of it would be just like a bidirectional or whatever they're called, linked list, right? That has a link forward and a link back. So you can put things in the front in zero time as well as in the back or things, something like that. So there's got to be some trade-off there. And presumably it just takes up more memory that you trade off in order to get the better performance. So it would have been cool to see something like that in here. But otherwise, it's a pretty good article. It's good.
Yeah. I mean, you would think maybe memory would be the way that things would go weird.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Because you'd normally have a stack and you put things into the stack and you're just appending it onto the memory address set, you know, the next available memory address, right?
Right.
But if you want to put something at the beginning, are you moving everything over one, or, you know what I mean? To get something in the front.
Right. That's hence the linked list. Yeah.
Or is there like an index that's built in? It still goes into the fourth or fifth position, but it's recorded as being in the first or second, right? I don't know.
Yeah. That seems like it would be really slow, but I don't know.
Yeah. We don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is definitely, to Mark's point, this is definitely a call to really good documentation for this sort of thing, where, and I don't know if it applies here in these implementations, but I have seen other data structures described in libraries that'll say, okay, it behaves this way until you have this number of elements. And then right. if you get more elements, it switches to a different algorithm, but has this other sort of trade-offs, right? So it might say, oh, okay, well, you can add, you know, 10,000 elements, and this is how much memory it'll use, this is how much time it'll take, this is how much, you know, other characteristics. But then if you start getting, you know, more elements than that, it switches to this other algorithm, and the memory and time and et cetera change additionally based on this rate. And that's really helpful yep. to know, right? Yeah. Because you don't want to be like, hey, it works super great, and then that 10,001 element is what completely destroys the utility of this. So it's really good, I think, to document that sort of thing. It's hard as a library writer. I get it. Like, you kind of don't want to reveal the internals until you're really, really sure that you can make those strong guarantees. But I do think for this sort of thing that's foundational, you really want to get to that point where you can very clearly describe, here's what happens, however large this gets.
Now, this article does, to its credit, show some benchmarks on the speed, exactly. You know, performance improvements that you get. But it almost looks too magical, right? Because it doesn't say that there's any downside to it. So yeah, they should maybe be a little bit more forthcoming there.
Well, that green line that they have there is, I guess it's the control, is the array, right?
Yep.
Standard array. And it looks like these things, you know, over time and, you know, in terms of size, don't grow that great. But why does the array one shoot up like a hockey stick? That would be my question.
Oh, because, well, it's order N, right? So it's, they're plotting membership testing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the more, if you just have a plain old array, you don't have any idea what's in all the elements. So if you want to check if certain element exists in the array, all you can do, the worst case result, the best worst case result you have is just, you have to look at every single one. So as the number of items goes up, the time increases linearly.
So in these examples that they got benchmarked here, that would seem to me, as you know, as a non-CI person, mm-hmm. I look at this and say, or CS person, I mean, it looks like they're relatively efficient over time, right? And size.
They are, yes, right. That's because it's a set. It's hashable, and they can you know use the hash tables to very quickly find where this thing might sit, right? Since you can only have one of a certain value in the set, then you can reserve a certain memory location for that one value based on the hash. And so if you want to know if that value exists in the set, well, you know where it has to exist, where it's supposed to sit if it exists. So you just check that one location. So it's a constant time operation. Very, very efficient to find things.
Cool. All right. Yep. Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Alrighty. So yeah, we wanted to gather here today because Wednesday, April 21st, because yesterday was 4:20 and yeah, we were all just laid back and, you know, no, I'm kidding. Yesterday we had the Apple event, the Apple Spring event, where Apple announced a bunch of nice new things for those of us. And I think if we can build off the rumor mill, first of all, there was a number of stories that were coming out about what we would expect. And I don't think there was any surprises in terms of what we saw, right?
I don't know. So, purple? Were you expecting a purple phone?
Yeah, that wasn't no. rumored. Well, Touch ID was not rumored.
And the podcast thing, too, was we weren't expecting that. But yeah, no, you're right. The colors, the rumor guys totally messed up on the colors.
Totally missed the colors.
Got to give them a strike on that one, right? For sure. Yeah, so why don't we just dig in? Jaime, you've got the list here, and I've got some notes, and we can just sort of start riffing on what was up for. Well, first of all, Tim Cook said, you know, they were talking about this celebration of Earth Day week, and they talked about how, you know, Apple is wonderfully carbon neutral across their global infrastructure, and by 2030, Apple will be 100% green across their entire supplier chain, which is kind of an interesting, you know, position to be in, right? So, like, not only it's like the, you know, getting your suppliers to buy into that too is kind of cool, right, for the environment and all. And then they said Apple Car. I don't know if you heard that, but we were joking before it started about introducing an Apple Car, right? And then he went, and he literally, we all heard it as Apple Car.
Or was it Apple Car?
Maybe. Not much to tell us by the Apple Cart.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, given that we're in the live streaming era, it's like, so is that the live stream a little slow? Is it weird intonation? Is it, you know, the adrenaline has got me pumped up so fast the time is slowing down for me? But this was, you know, these first two items, starting with Apple Card Family, were in the, I call it hold my beer mode that Tim Cook was in, of like, let me just get a whole bunch of these things right out of the way that I feel like, you know, had they spent more than the hour, because it's a very, very packed hour of content, I feel like you could have gotten more details. We were like, let's just get this off the table. So Apple Card Family, where spouses and partners can share credit building history versus sort of the traditional model of you both have registered access to the card, but somebody's considered primary and they're the ones building the history and you're just sort of tagging along. In this case, in addition to spouses and partners, you can have folks over the age of 13 with additional optional controls as part of this whole Apple Card Family thing. So even presumably your teenage children can start building their credit history through this, which is neat, real neat. Unfortunately, yeah, nice, they did not announce availability in Canada, which is what I thought for sure was going to happen when he brought up Apple Card or, you know, additional bits there, but I'm sure it'll come soon.
Well, I think they did talk about Apple. Oh no, we had the Apple Card and Apple Cash trademarks were registered in Canada a few months ago, right? But yeah, anyway, moving on. The other announcement was, I'll do this one. Number two was Apple Podcast subscriptions, which, you know, was kind of interesting. They for $20 or $19 US, I guess, Apple is going to allow podcasters to join in the program. And again, it's similar to the App Store commission structure where they'll take 30% up to a certain limit and then 15% after the first year, I think, of revenues from podcasters. Guffaw, by the way. The idea behind Apple Podcasts is you could have, you know, extra content, specific, you know, content that's exclusive, longer after shows. We'll put those on the subscription page. But, you know, based on, you know, I'm a bit cynical about, you know, app sales in general, and I'm also a bit cynical about people supporting podcasts based on prior experience, I gotta say. I'm not so sure that this is for the everyman podcaster. This is probably more for the bigger players, right? What do you guys think?
I do think that you're right, that I can't see. We were joking about 30% or zero is still zero, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Right.
And then scrounge out a dirty $20 bill out of my pocket to pay Apple yearly for the privilege of being part of this, for us being in that space. I do think that certainly the top end, like the truly, truly top end of this podcasting market, I think will not like the split, right? I think that 30% for the first year and 50% thereafter is too high for them, and they're better off pushing people to their own bespoke models or using something like Glow that charges less. So I think the low end is also kind of, you know, out of the picture for this, right? If you got, you know, a handful of really dedicated fans, that's great, but that's not going to be that much money. So I think the real sweet spot for this is sort of that middle market where you're not an NPR, you're not three people in a basement at the bottom, and you're probably just on the edge. Like I feel like Leo Laporte's Twit might be on the top end of this,
right?
And probably more distinctly somebody like Dan Benjamin's 5x5 network, somewhere in there where like the trade-off is you don't have to manage all that stuff and you do have it be seamless and easy because it's just wonderful through everybody's, you know, iTunes account, their Apple Card, or, you know, all these different ways that Apple has owned the relationship. So I think I find it as in general positive. I just don't think it's not going to be the panacea, right? It's not the silver bullet for folks. You aren't going to have a huge wave of people suddenly, you know, quitting their jobs and becoming professional podcasters.
But, you never know.
I mean, now how much would you pay for us to be professionally podcasters and throw in your money, put your money where your mouth is, folks.
We've had fans of our shows who started YouTube careers while we've been doing this podcast for six and a half years now, almost 7 years. And they've done quite well. I mean, some of them are working full time, you know, just doing podcasts doing video stuff on YouTube. My question I do though have though is we've lost some subscribers to Patreon, right? Like we had some supporters on Patreon and there was some hiccups with Patreon, some questions about, you know, their practices, whatever. And we've actually had people pull their patronage of us off of there. And also, you know, YouTube has got these crazy rules about you have to have, you know, 4,000 listeners and 10,000 listens per month or some, don't quote me on those numbers, but you have to have numbers in order to be able to get revenue from YouTube. You know, more power to those of you who do. But so that's challenging. But I mean, do you think people would feel better about the money going through Apple? Like you said, I hadn't really thought about the Apple ID, you know, subscription thing being, you know, easy peasy for most people, right? But do you think that giving people will feel less apprehensive about giving money to Apple on our behalf?
Oh, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about, and that there, you know, there have been other, you know, other ways for folks to make money that through no fault of the creator, the middleman taking the money on their behalf has done something sleazy, and people don't rightfully don't want to have a business relationship, and the creator gets hurt through no fault of their own, because in many cases it's hard to keep up with that sort of thing, right? So I think that is a nice benefit of this, is that, I mean, if you have something in terms of heartburn with Apple, like you're leaving altogether for the ecosystem, right? And I think it's less likely for Apple to do the crazy sleazy thing in search of, you know, a tiny amount of profit than others might do. So this might add some stability to that. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I don't know. It might help build too. I mean, like the thing is, like today, I mean, when we started this, you know, 6.5 years ago, there were a number of podcasts, but they weren't great numbers. But now this seems like everybody and his brother has a podcast, right? You know, which is great. I mean, like, no, I mean, like Tim Cook said, they started out with, I don't know, what, 60,000 or something initially, and then now they're into millions of shows people can choose from. And I also like the fact that we didn't talk about this, but they're starting to do channeling where they'll be able to have like a tech channel, for instance, maybe, you know, and be able to do recommendations to people through the podcast app. I mean, which is kind of nice. So I did actually take the podcast app, the Apple podcast app, for a drive the other day. Yesterday, actually, when I heard about this, just to see what they've been up to. And, like, you know, we've started adding chapter headings into our feed so people can skip around in different parts of the show and go back and listen to something that they heard us say. And as well, you know, they've added more sort of look and feel to the podcast app. So they've not been just resting on their laurels, you know, with the podcast app. They've made some improvements. And this new screenshot that he showed seemed to have more things about that. Because like with the App Store, discovery is the challenge. I think, you know, for a lot, I don't know, maybe people can let us know how they find out about the show, but like, how do people find us, right? I really don't know, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to put analytics into a podcast.
Yeah, and again, you know, the analytics we do get are kind of lame anyway, but in fact, for both of our shows, I've stopped doing the analytics thing. One of the services we were using offered it for free, and it was like useless to me. So I just stopped. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's cool. Yeah. So the promise of subscriptions obviously is for ad-free listening. I don't know if people have noticed, but we haven't had very many ads in the last year. And 170 regions, I think they talked about where the podcast app is going to be able to cater to people, right? So, and then Prince entered the dialogue.
It's funny you mentioned that because, all right, we'll get there, right?
But you're the master of segues. You know that, honey.
You're hinting very, very nicely and segueing very nicely into the new iPhone color. It is some color of purple. I would call it lavender or lilac.
Mauve, maybe mauve. Yeah.
Well, I could see mauve. But it is not, and longtime fans of the show know that I've been asking for a purple rain color. So go into your attic and get out your parents' LPs. That would be the big, you know, plastic discs, and go find the one that has prints on it and purple rain. You see that color? I want that purple. And in lieu of having that color, because, you know, maybe it's copyrighted or trademarked or something, go into your kitchen pantry, pull out the grape Kool-Aid, and that color of purple is an acceptable one. And you're wondering, what is the difference? Like, well, because lavender and lilac are not purple. I want, you bought the cheap 16 color Crayola crayon box. That purple is the color of purple I want.
Right.
Nothing, you know, nothing wrong with this one. It's a little bit more light and pastel and springy.
Great popsicle color, right?
Yeah, which is fine. But I want purple. So closer
to getting one color.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're like Carol's really fussy about the color red. She likes the product red color. And for up until, you know, a few years ago, Apple, you know, had red, but they didn't quite have product red. She's really into that particular red color. But So just sidebar here, do you guys know the history of the color purple? Like why it was the king's color?
I don't know for sure, but I would speculate it's probably difficult to make.
Very costly. Difficult to make, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was super, super expensive to make purple, which is why the kings and rulers of countries had access to color purple. But it was actually in when they started using gaslight to light the cities, and you get this off-gassing called coal black. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. Like it builds up on the glass of the lanterns and stuff like that. Well, they found somebody accidentally threw a bunch of this coal black stuff into water and it turned purple. And that was so purple was a color invented sort of during the Industrial Revolution because of the fact that they didn't know how to make it up until that point. And that's the history of the color purple. That's really bad history, I'm sure. But I watched a show called Connections back in the day. People, you know, might remember that one. James Burke, I think, was the name of the host. But yeah, he did a Connections episode about the color purple once, which I kind of thought was cool. End of sidebar. So I find it odd that they introduced this next thing as Find My. It used to be Find My iPhone initially, right?
Yeah, they changed it relatively recently to be more inclusive and I guess they officially maybe opened up the whole third party thing, so more than just Apple itself can participate.
Right.
So Tile, if you're out there, I don't know if you're listening to the show. Sorry, Tile.
Yeah. I'm not buying another Tile.
Tile, if you're listening to our fine show, you can participate in the Find My network as well.
Can they?
Yeah, it's open to third parties. I don't know if random people off the street can do it. I assume it's probably like the MFI program where you got to be, you know, this tall to enter sort of thing.
Yeah, I've been using Tile for since 2013 or something, whenever it came out. I remember when it was, I met one of the developers or friend of the developers at a Mac or at WWDC once. And so I've been using Tile ever since. And really annoying that, you know, they run for a year and then you have to replace them because they up until recently, they didn't have replaceable batteries. But I think what I'm alluding to is Apple has finally come out with this new item called AirTag, which is kind of cool, right? Inexpensive as well. Like, I mean, you know, I think the Tiles are like $60 a piece. These are like $29 US
or $39
Canadian. Yeah. Well, the only thing about it is, though, Mark, is that, you know, at least Tile has a hole so you can put it on your keychain right away. Mm. Whereas with AirTag, you have to buy some sort of accessory, which, spoilers for my main pick, you know, you have to put this in something to make it work, right? To you know, otherwise you're just finding a Tile, like, you know, it's like finding a quarter in your pocket. But what do you guys think about this this new device? Actually, you can change batteries too. That was one of the questions that people asked about.
So I think we've been waiting for them so long that no one's really surprised or shocked, right? And it's sort of hard to get excited because we've known that it's coming and it does exactly what everyone thought it was going to do, right? But it's a cool thing. Cool thing. And it's a good price. I kind of wonder, this just occurred to me today that when I was thinking about the fact that we've been waiting for these things for a long time, and I wonder if they actually were ready a year ago and Apple just made a kind of a brilliant marketing decision that when nobody's leaving the house because of the pandemic, they don't really need a lot of these tags. So they wouldn't buy that many. And if they went out a year ago, it might have been considered a failure.
Right. Good point. Yeah. I mean, I was thinking, I don't know if it was specifically about this part of the show, but yeah, it's, we were talking, when we get to the iPad and start talking about 5G again, you know, it's kind of right now in Toronto, you know, our third wave is worse than our first and second wave. And we've now all been ordered to stay home. Like you guys were protecting place last March and April, right? We're now at that point, you know, and unsurprisingly so, but, you know, and when somebody introduces me to a 5G device, I'm like, great, I can use it when I'm walking my dog.
Yeah, true. Yeah. True. Well, to some of the points about pricing, I think it's a good price. So that is one for $29 US or a four pack for a little bit of savings there to $99 US. It could be a great price, however, had they included even the most basic of keyring straps, right? And this is the part that's like, it's kind of chintzy. It's kind of like, well, I understand the not everybody's going to want that. You might just throw it in your gym bag and it's great. It doesn't necessarily need the ring, but it'd be nice to have even a cheap fluoroelastomer one, right? Like imagine buying an Apple Watch and they didn't give you a band, which maybe they might do in the future. If like you can get a band separately, maybe you already have a bazillion bands. It's different when you're you know, iterating on an existing product versus making a new product.
Or even a double-sided like sticky back or something so you could adhere it to something, right?
Like, yeah, it's like nature gave you duct tape for a reason, so use it, right?
Oh, and I just had a vision of all these the air tags duct taped onto things.
Just duct tape. It was like, where did I park my dang car? It's like, I'm just going to put it right there on the
side. Well, I guess the idea is you could throw it into your luggage and you could find your luggage on the carousel at the airport. What's an airport, you ask, right? Mm. But, I mean, I'm going to order four on Friday or whenever they come available, and I'll probably get Carol a key ring, you know, like the Apple Red product red one for $45, you know, like the key ring, the holder costs more than the AirTag, right? Unless you go to third parties, of course. But again, spoilers for Jaime's pick. But I don't know. It's I like the price, you know. I like the idea. I like the fact that it works with my phone, you know, with the Find My app, right?
Yeah, and it's got that precision finding with the U1 chip, which I had stated was a missed opportunity to make it look like the motion tracker from the movie Aliens with the dots and the sonar, bing, ding, bing, ding, bing, ding, sort of thing. But, you know, guess they couldn't have gone that route.
Are they magnetic too? No,
I don't believe they are.
That would be kind of a nice thing. I'm kind of liking the, you know, the MagSafe thing on the phone right now, the way it clicks.
Yeah, that's really nice. Yeah, I'm getting used to that too.
And so having this do the same kind of thing where you could just kind of stick it onto something would be kind of cool.
Yeah, that's true.
Putting it on a dog collar. Yeah. Where the heck did my dog go?
AirTag Pro.
Yeah.
Yep. They talked about the safety features like unwanted tag detection.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
Which is great.
You can't track people unwantedly, right? Mm. So
So you can be told if, like, hey, there's a tag that keeps moving with you and it's not one that's connected to this account. And apparently, and this was not stated during the event, but after the fact, apparently even Android phones can at least read the tag using NFC. So they can see the, you know, call so-and-so or email so-and-so to, you know, return this thing. So that's nice.
But you know what? It's interesting because, I mean, again, that's something I said before. I mean, I remember when iTunes took off, when they introduced it to, they made it available on Windows, right? I remember, you know, when they, iPhone, same thing. When iPhone could be managed on a Windows device, that's when the product kind of took off. I mean, so it makes sense to, you know, not limit this to this, you know, walled garden that they like to accuse us of living in, but to make it available to other platforms as much as they can. I mean, you know, like you said, NFC being the sort of lowest common denominator here, right? You know?
Yeah. And the other thing, because people are the way they are, the internet, this is not an anti-theft device. This is a Find My Lost Thing device. You might wonder, what's the distinction? It's like, well, people were trying to come with like, oh, well, what if I did blah, blah, blah to like defeat your ability to find this? It's like, well, then good. You have successfully stolen my thing, right? Like that was already possible. This is intended to be, dude, where's my car, right? Sort of thing. Where did I leave my gym bag?
That's a good point. You're where to park, yeah.
Yeah, it's if it was going to be an anti-theft device, it would have to be, you know, enhanced like the way a Batman villain would have, of like knockout gas that activates in the surrounding area to find the culprits.
Yeah, it's tough. All right. And then he moved on to Apple. Well, they talked about Apple TV Plus and how wonderful Ted Lasso is. And one of our friends on the show who lives in England said, you guys watch that show?
it's a good show. And let me tell you,
it was pretty funny.
Let me tell you,
if we went to England right now and got a bunch and hired a, you know, and made a show about American football where we brought an English guy over to be the coach of the American football, would you guys watch that?
I think that happened, didn't it? I vaguely remember a movie about some soccer about some soccer coach being a coach of a football team, and you know, at first no one thought it would work, and then of course it works at the end and blah blah blah.
Yeah,
I'll have to look this up.
Yeah, speaking of which, the Mighty Ducks has come back on the TV, right? Anyway, sorry, carry on.
Yeah, beyond just I think being an excuse to talk about Apple TV Plus and legitimately show a trailer for the second season of a series that will start on July 23rd, which appears to be just outside the boundaries of everybody's extensions on their free year of Apple TV Plus. I think Ted Lasso is largely the actual hit of the Apple TV series.
Well, they won a Grammy or an Emmy or whatever for that, right?
Yeah. So like Apple very clearly wanted the morning show to be its big breakout hit. It very clearly wanted For All Mankind, even C and Servant. I happen to like, you know, those. I happen to like Mythic Quest. I like Ted Lasso, but I think from the people's choice of like what actually happened, I think it's Ted Lasso is the big breakout hit for Apple TV Plus.
Yeah, it is the most pedestrian of all the shows. I mean, it's the most like a TV show kind of thing, right? Whereas the rest are, they fit particular genre, right?
Yeah, so it's got a broader sort of appeal, you know, the fish out of water, and you can, it's easier to understand and laugh at. And I also think it came out at a good time that Ted Lasso is not all comedy. There's definitely a drama aspect, so it's legitimately a dramedy, but there's just so much pure goodness in the show that I think came out at the right time when everybody's feeling very down after months and months of lockdown last year, right? So
maybe
I am hoping that they can continue to succeed even as we start, you know, coming out of the other side of this thing.
Right. Well, all right, let's talk about the new Apple TV Plus 4K. It's got the new next generation A12 Bionic chip, for one thing. It's got the HDR video, high definition frame rate, right? Has color balance built in as well, and you can measure the color balance with your phone, which brings me back to my pre-press days when we used to use Hux to measure and calibrate our monitors to, you know, make them color accurate. So that's kind of cool. And a new remote. I think that's the sort of maybe big story for this device, right? As well as the highfalutin power and stuff.
Yeah, I think in the post-Johnny Ive era, they can now get back to, not only does it look good, but it works good as well.
Right.
So they seem to have resolved a lot of the issues with the remote of being able to tell which way is up.
Which way is up,
on this thing. And having the five-way click pad, the touch sensitivity, and the iPod-esque jog control.
Oh, jogging. Holy cow.
I mean,
give me a break.
These all make sense to me, right? These are all things that 100% make sense. I feel like it's a good, solid remote. It is apparently also a remote that's compatible with existing Apple TV.
Oh, nice.
I don't know all models, probably the 4K models at the very minimum, but...
So do you know if you can buy the remote by itself?
I think you can. I think it's like $50 or something, so it's not cheap.
Oh, cool.
But it's available there.
Insta-buy, yeah.
Yeah, and the color balance feature is really cool. I struggle with that sort of thing. Like, am I actually making this look good, or am I just doing a bad job? So kind of nice to have something that tells you to do there.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody about the Apple TV, just in general. I mean, like, there is a slew of smart TVs out there, but, I mean, an Apple TV can make any TV a smart TV, because you have Prime in it, you have Netflix, you have YouTube, you have Disney Plus, as well as Apple, and then there's sort of that whole sort of homogenous experience where the Apple TV app pulls in content from those other apps, right? So you can just flip through shows pretty much, right? So, I mean, the Apple TV itself, the device, is nice because it does that, you know? So I don't know about you guys, but like I very rarely go off to the other parts of my TV. There's just one particular service I can't get through Apple TV, but for everything else, I just use the Apple TV, and I've got my new HomePod plugged into it too, so I've got the really good sound now happening, right? So
interesting. I'm sort of the opposite. I barely use my Apple TV, actually. And
what do you watch?
And
cable?
It's because, yeah, I mean, I have cable, and pretty much everything is all available on there through a pretty simple interface. So for me to get to my Apple TV, it means getting another remote out and changing, you know, flipping over. It's kind of a pain. It's kind of a hassle.
I use my phone mostly for my Apple TV.
Right? I like it too. And that is the other remote, right, that I use. But it's still, maybe I just have a bad universal remote, but my universal remote handles pretty much everything except my Apple TV.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, because my TV remote does work rudimentally well with my Apple TV. I can do most things. I can pause. I can, you know, go back and forth and up and down.
Okay.
I have a direction pad on my Samsung remote that came with my TV.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, anytime I have to do keyboard input, I use my phone for that, right? But, mm-hmm. I mean, it's gotten to the point where, you know, if I want to watch something on the Apple TV, I just either double tap the remote or open up the remote app on my phone, and then my TV automatically senses which HDMI port is active and switches over automatically. So even if I'm watching cable TV, which I do watch cable TV too, but even if I am watching cable TV and I want to watch something like maybe stream from my phone to the big screen, like if I want to watch the Apple event or something like that, or some training courses or whatever, I'll just send it to the Apple TV and it'll switch my TV over, and I got the awesome HomePod audio and all that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of nice. Anything else we want to say about the Apple TV, honey?
Well, I'll throw in my two cents. So I do not own an Apple TV. I own a Roku. That's because I bought this Roku and into the system back when Apple and Amazon were fighting each other, and the neutral country was Roku that had access to just about everything. And that's become even more true as Apple has extended out its Apple TV Plus service and AirPlay to non-Apple devices. So it's a better situation, I think, for everybody, in that you can just get the content any way you want. In terms of the Apple TV 4K device, it feels like it's in a weird spot. So I think it's either, I don't know, it is simultaneously too expensive and not expensive. expensive enough. And you might wonder, what do you mean? It's like, well, at $179 and $199 US for 32 gigs and 64 gigs, it is too expensive to really compete with the Fire TVs, Rokus, and it's and Chromecast, etc. of the world. And that's for the TV streaming sort of you know, media streaming capabilities. When it comes to gaming, which is where that higher frame rate and the A12 Bionic can really, really, you know, earn its keep, it's underpowered compared to actual game systems. So it's kind of in a weird, like the opposite of a sweet spot, right? It's kind of in a weird middle where I think the device capability is perfectly fine if they remove, you know, big chunks of money off the price. Or I would like to see future iterations of this really try to compete in the gaming area if they're even looking to do that. It just feels like this is trying to serve too many purposes and not being especially good at either one, even though it's well and good for on average.
Interesting. You know, one of our friends of our show quoted something to me the other day. He called it the medium popcorn problem. Is this the medium popcorn problem, do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. Do you want to explain that for folks who, I don't know if this works culturally, certainly Canada and America, this is a shared culture we have.
Yeah, so we've talked about this on the show before, and it's when you give somebody choices of three, and it's a movie theater trick where they give you a small popcorn, which is reasonably sized, and they give you the big giant bag of popcorn, and then they give you a medium popcorn. And the idea behind is you don't want to have, the small is too small, but you don't want to seem as like, you know, you don't want to seem like you're, you know, gorging on popcorn. So you opt to the medium popcorn. But what they do with the pricing is they make it so that the medium popcorn is slightly less expensive than the large, right? So the, you know, for an extra couple of shekels, you can go to the large. And a lot of times what people do is they go, oh, well, yeah, I'll get the large because it's just a few more shekels, right? And that's, we've talked about that on the show many, many times where there's three choices given to you and generally people will go for the large choice because it's not that much expensive. But, and it's sort of what you're saying is, you know, as, you know, I can get a stick, a TV on a stick, right? Like a Roku or those, what's the Google thing? Where you just plug it into your HDMI port.
Yeah.
Chromecast, yeah. And then, or you can go for the highfalutin whatever, right? Like you can get your PlayStation and your Xbox, whatever they're called these days, for gaming on the high end, right? And sort of does this fit in the middle? Is that where I guess what I'm asking, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I am wondering, who are these people that buy the medium popcorn? Because there's, to your point about the pricing, there's sort
Mark
of...
Mark and me.
Well, there's two legitimate strategies here, right? There is, you know, paying not the best price, still the lowest price, but not the best value for a normal human being quantity of popcorn at the movie theater, right? The small is good for that. The large is the best value, especially if you're totally okay in using it to fill a beanbag chair with the leftovers, right? Like, that is a vast amount of popcorn for the highest price, but per, you know, per kernel is easily the best value. The medium is the one that, like, you get more than a normal human amount, and yet you're not paying a lower amount per quantity for it. So hit us up, hashtag AskMTJC. Are you a medium popcorn buyer just for that? And I think that sort of applies here, that I'd love to see. It is way easier to change the price, just being realistic here, right? It is way easier to knock off $50 right off that price across all their models to make this, I think, a better competitive product, given they're already manufacturing these.
Cool. Well, I got to give a shout out to Evan K. Stone, who's the one who came up with the medium popcorn expression problem, medium popcorn problem. All right. So anyway, so the other big thing that they announced, and this is the only part of the show that I actually got. Oh, no, sorry. There's one more thing before we get there. Yeah, it kind of falls along the color theme there, Jaime. The surprise, surprise, color IMAX, which nobody was surprised by.
Yeah, I don't know if we knew the colors specifically. I believe there are seven colors. Yeah. But there were still some surprises to be found in this colorful IMAX powered by the...
Yeah, they weren't quite as muted as you would expect, right? Like, I think right. If they had a purple IMAX, it would be purple, right? Wait, they don't have a purple IMAX?
They do have a purple one. Oh, go to the Apple.com iMac 24. It is closer to being legitimately purple, depending on which side you're looking on, right? So right. To go to Apple.com/iMac hyphen 24 and you, I don't know, scroll maybe a quarter of the way down the page, they let you see all the different color options. And if you look at the side of the device and you look at the back of the device, that is actually the purple that I want. Mm-hmm. On the front, however, is something more like lilac or lavender or mauve, right? Like I'm less pleased with that color segment. So yes and no, it is there is a, they claim it to be purple color for the iMac, including orange,
this is for people coming
yellow,
into your office, right?
Yeah.
The color pink, they'll see when they eventually come to your office.
Green and traditional silver.
Yeah. I was going to mention this before the show, but I just want to talk about it now. But I don't know if you remember when they came out with the color iMacs, initially they all had a name like the strawberry and the, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But they never had the iMac lemon till now.
They call it? Do they call it the lemon? No.
No, they didn't. But I'm just jokingly calling it the, it's more like a canary than as far as yellow colors go. It's not a lemon yellow, right? But I always thought that was odd that they had, you know, the different colors and they all had a name like raspberry and blueberry and cherry and whatever, you know, grape, right? But they never had a yellow.
Well, iMac. They might have done that very much on purpose.
Yeah, which is where I'm going with
who's
that.
Who wants to buy a lemon?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So color iMac, 4.5K display for those who are splitting hairs. Neural engine, tone mapping, improved camera. Yeah, the whole idea behind the working from home point of view with the improved cameras and to basically make you look better on the thing, as well as a 3-mic array for better sound and even more efficient speakers for the WebEx and, you know, Zoom watching folks out there, right? And Mark finally came up with a Touch ID keyboard.
Yeah, I might have to buy one of those. Did they say when those are available?
I don't know, but do they, I wonder what Macs they're compatible with.
I saw an article that said they're compatible with all M1 Macs.
Oh, nice. Okay,
which
cool.
Means great. That I'm good.
You're good, yeah. Are you using clamshell mode for your, or you're on a mini?
I'm on a mini,
Yeah, I mean, Touch ID is like, that's sent from the gods, I gotta say, you know, sure.
It'd be nice to have Face ID on a Mac though, wouldn't it?
Yes, that's true. But then would you want it waking up every time you walk by it?
I guess depending on your home layout, I'm okay with that.
I guess in the office that might be bad, but I mean, they could make it very directional, so you have to be looking right at it.
Right. The one thing I'm not super thrilled about, I mean, I'm cool with the idea of the you know, we talked about MagSafe Max before, MagSafe power supplies. MagSafe is back on this new iMac, right? Because it's got this fancy cable. Mm-hmm. And the Ethernet goes through the power brick, right?
That's pretty cool, actually.
It is pretty cool, except for my one pet peeve is it's an external power brick. I mean, you know, my Apple II had one, you know, I've had the G4 Cube has an external power supply. I've never really been a big fan. Mind you, I shouldn't say that because we all work on laptops these days, right? Mm-hmm. And we all have external power bricks. But yeah, that is, I guess that's cool. But I just found it odd for a desktop machine to have a brick. Mm. But mind you, I guess that's why they can keep it thin too, because they don't have the transformer inside the case, right?
Yep. Yeah, I feel like, and this will certainly vary with, you know, your particular home layout or office layout. Tim, this one didn't bother me because I gladly make the trade-off for a thinner iMac and just shove the power brick off into the island of misfit toys where all my other power bricks are underneath my desk and never to be seen again. Right.
Right.
But I understand what you're talking about, that it loses a little bit of the... some of the mystique, right? We're like, hey, it was all here. It's like, well, it's kind of not. There's this other thing behind the scenes that's doing some work. But I think I'm okay with the trade-off personally, but I can totally understand why other people would not be okay with it.
I actually really like the idea of not having to run that extra cable up to your computer.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, if you're plugging it in somewhere close to where your Ethernet's coming in, you just leave the brick kind of over there, plug in the Ethernet cable, and just have the one wire coming up. I think that's kind of nice, personally.
Right. Looks like the same M1 chip. I'm just looking at the specs on the actual chips. They seem to have the same 7-core GPU and 8-core GPU that they have on the current.
Yeah. I think they would have made a much bigger deal if it was a new chip.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wait. They all come with 8 gigs, but you can upgrade it to 16. Yeah. I just want to see the ports, because they talked about the 4 USBs, right? So they have, okay, so there's a 2-port model and a 4-port model, and with 2 USB 4 ports, right? But so all, you know, 3, so 4 USB 3 ports, but 2 of them are Thunderbolt. No media slot, no HDMI slot, no... I guess, again, that's to make it thin, right?
Yeah, the other thing is these are not the high-end iMacs.
Right, they're not the pros.
Right, so this is a 24-inch display in the same physical physical size or similar physical size is 21 inch. This is not the larger, what is it, 27?
27, yeah.
So that's, I think, something for folks to keep in mind, because you do get the two Thunderbolt ports. I think you can get more for what I recall. I did a bad job of writing my notes in this part, but this is, I think, very similar to their other first tier of M1 stuff. They're starting at the easier low end, and then they're going to start, you know, cranking it up to 11 as they start marching towards something like the Mac Pro at the top end of the line.
This is interesting. They have the lower end model has blue, green, pink, and silver, and the high end model offers yellow, orange, and purple. I mean,
yeah, it's kind of interesting the way they segmented that. Or, you know, we're still talking on the lower end. When we say low end, we want to be really clear that the M1 is so powerful that it's like not true low end, right? But in terms of like where market segmentation is going to happen, it's weird that the lower end here for this iMac is split into an even lower end that only gets a handful of colors compared to the full seven for the higher end of the low end.
Oh, wait, you can get a built-in Visa mount as well. That's cool. You can order it without the stand.
Yeah, yeah. The thing we didn't talk about in terms of the keyboard, which again, you know, the MTJC bump strikes again, where they've taken our idea and said, yes, it's a good idea, MTJC crew. We should add a keyboard that has a Touch ID in it. Did you also notice how ginormous the escape key is? It is massive. It is as if you know, the designer who removed the escape key and the Touch Bar MacBook Pros was shaking his or her fist at everyone and said, "You want an escape key? I will give you this thing. Is going to be the size of a balloon escape key."
Or the designer who took away the escape key has been replaced by this new guy who's going to make sure that never happened. That doesn't happen to him.
Right.
Or her.
Interesting. Them, yeah, for sure. It's funny.
Yeah, it's one of those little things. And again, going back to color, I'm sort of split on this because, you know, if you were to ask me, and I'm not in the market for an iMac, I tend to use the MacBook Pros. But if I were in the market for one, what color would I get is sort of challenging, because I'm really drawn towards the purple color and the little red Corvette. They call it pink here, but the back is red. The problem being that front face, right? That front face is either lilac, lavender for the purple, or Pepto-Bismol for the front of the pink device, which, you know, this is going to be one of those hard things, given that we're in a pandemic world. Like, I want to see what these actually look like in the real world, right? These are beautiful pictures, beautiful product photos, but color accuracy is going to be difficult to judge from these, right? Like, I want to see, ideally, I would want to see, what does this device look like in my actual office, right? Like, that's the true thing. But in lieu of that, I'd like to see, you know, when it's safe, I'd like to go in an Apple store, see what these look like, and then make my decision there. From what I see here on the interwebs, I would probably fall back to the blue or the green, because they seem to have the most pleasant front face and back end combo of colors. Nothing wrong with silver, although it's kind of plain. I like the new color schemes.
Yeah. So can we talk about the iPad now?
Well, before we go there, I think the last thing that I had written in my notes was laugh out loud, Intel was holding us back, is sort of the the understated, but they actually did sort of state thing that was interesting. So kudos to Apple as they continue to control the top to bottom of the stack with Apple M1.
Nice. Yeah. I don't know if it's a big story, but the story is that the next piece they introduced is an M1 iPad Pro to replace my 2020 iPad that I bought last year. But yeah, up to 75% faster CPU performance, according to their charts, you know, 1500 times faster graphics, the new ultra wide camera, so that, you know, it has the software feature called Center Stage, where it'll follow you as you move around, the camera angle will change, liquid retina crystal display, but this is using the mini LEDs. We've been talking about mini LEDs for the last couple of months, right? Or 6 months, right? That's the new sort of display technology.
I think so.
Yeah. And apparently, like, you know, gazillion times more, you know, LEDs than in the Pro XDR display. They're calling this Liquid Pro XDR too, right? So it's like the same sort of quality or type of, not high end as the Pro Display XDR, but 4 million pixels in the 11 inch model and 15.5 6 million pixels in the 12-inch model as well, right? And 10,000 LEDs in this device, right? And it also works with my smart keyboard, yay! Which is nice. I'm glad they didn't switch over to having to use having to buy a new smart keyboard and all that stuff too, which is nice. I mean, and the same pencil, right? As a someone who bought these things last year, it's nice to know that I can upgrade just the actual device and not worry about my peripheral.
Yeah, that's good because it's a little silly to have to change. I mean, I think there should always be nice to add and change, but falling back to backwards compatibility mode is acceptable, I think. So I'm glad to see they didn't change any of that.
Yeah, it looks nice. I mean, I really like my of all the things I bought last year, I think I do because I have a work computer and I have a home computer, and my development computer is my home computer, my personal development one. But my iPad, I use it in my day-to-day work because I use it for all of my tools and as well as, web access and stuff like that. I just find it works much better than trying to struggle through VPNs and all that stuff, right? It sits here on this nice little, smart keyboard, so it's nice. I can continue to work while I'm in a meeting and that kind of stuff, right? Look things up and stuff like that. But yeah, this I think this iPad is really compelling, for me. But
and with this model, I mean, it's really getting hard to see the difference between this model and a MacBook 13-inch, right? Except for the software it's running.
Yeah.
I mean, if you take this iPad, stick it in, what is it, the Magic Keyboard with the trackpad and all that?
Yeah.
Really hard to see the difference. So it really asks the question, why can't we run Mac OS X on this thing and Xcode and all that? I mean, it's almost like
when they said we couldn't run on Intel. Remember they used to say that? They couldn't run Mac OS on it, or you couldn't run it on Intel, and then guess what?
Yeah. Especially you take one of these things, you power an external display, you run Mac OS X on this thing, you can't tell that this isn't a MacBook, a 13-inch MacBook. No way to tell.
You don't think somebody's going to try that?
Oh, of course. Yeah, someone will hack it.
But I mean
an officially supported way.
Right. Oh, see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I mean, look at this. So an 11-inch iPad Pro is $799 US base price. Mm-hmm. And the 12.9-inch display is $1099 US base price. And I don't know the dimensions, but that's really close to that 13-inch MacBook Pro that Mark is talking about.
Yeah,
and,
no, it definitely is.
And that thing plus a Magic Keyboard costs more than the 13-inch MacBook Air.
Does it? Oh, right. Yeah. Well, it's got the mini LED technology as well, right? So it also has touch, and it also has a pencil support, right?
Right.
So
5G upgrade for capability.
Yeah. I mean, you can run Photoshop on it. You run the Affinity software on here. You can run. There's a number of apps you can run on here that make it compelling. You've got the whole drag and drop thing going. You've got files. You can put USBs into it. You can put media adapters and use those with it. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do with an iPad now that you couldn't do before. You can use a mouse. Like I've hooked up a mouse to my iPad as well, right? Or a trackpad as well. It comes with, if you get the smart keyboard, you get the trackpad. But yeah, there's a lot of things about it that make it, I'm going to do air quotes here, a computer, right?
Yep.
But yeah, why can't we have Logic Pro? Why can't we have Final Cut Pro? We sort of do, I think. And why can't we have, Xcode?
Yep, I think it's time.
The big question.
That's my prediction. Okay, my prediction is within the year, this will be a thing.
Well, what if we're looking at this wrong? What if they're thinking, because one of the other things that we've always wanted is a touch bar or touchable or touch controlled Mac, right? Because this is kind of, we're now seeing that the technology is merging together, right? Why couldn't they have a MacBook Pro that supports pencil and has a touch screen?
What would be the difference?
Well, exactly.
Except the OS, right? So why can't you dual boot this thing? Forget about new hardware. We don't even need it. You dual boot this thing. It could be an iPad one day or it can be a Mac tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, isn't that what the Surface is? The Microsoft Surface?
Yeah, it kind of is it is the Surface.
Because it's a Windows machine, right? It's actual, runs actual Windows, right?
Yes, it does. Yep.
Just a matter of time.
Yep.
Indeed.
I was on record.
Would you pay?
Yeah, people go back and read these podcasts. I was talking about the merger of iOS and macOS. How many years ago was that? Yeah. I was just ahead of my time.
I was looking up antonyms for catalyst, and there's no good sounding ones. You'd have to choose something different, but the blurring of the lines that Project Catalyst gives you of being able to bring iOS apps over to the Mac, it would be kind of nice to see the opposite.
Right.
Positive direction. As well.
Yep.
Mac OS.
If only this show had an etymologist on it, right?
I went to thesaurus.com and chose, and it was like blocker prevention. None of these are good choices that sound good. So you need a whole new
catalyst. Yeah, catalyst. Well, catalyst is something that how I think of catalyst. I think about it from my art career. Is you know, you have, like, remember that liquid resin you could make, you could mount things into, and you know, float pennies in them or whatever. And you had to add a catalyst to make it, you know, go from liquid to solid. Right. But that's where the word catalyst in my mind.
Comes
from.
A chemistry term.
Yeah,
it's a reactant. It's right? Some kind of a chemical that enables or enhances some chemical reaction.
Mm-hmm. So why were you looking for an antonym to that? I mean,
to find something snarky, say, oh, they should name it project. And I was like, oh, there's no good antonyms for the opposite of catalyst.
Yes, we have synonyms.com. Let's go there and see what they say.
But synonyms, sure. Antonyms are challenging.
Anti-catalyst. Well, there you go.
Yeah, that would send the wrong message. So that would prevent you from running apps on the other platform. We already have that.
Yeah, we have that already. Yeah.
Good old project anti-disestablishmentarianism is
right.
What we're going with. Yeah. Hmm. So good events. We didn't talk about what could have been a Tom Cruise cameo in an alternate reality.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Mr. Tim Cook sneaking into his own building just to hijack some M1s in the Mission Impossible style video.
Yeah, that was pretty
something
fun.
Something tells me that wasn't really Tim Cook climbing through the window.
But a solid event. I think it took right around an hour, maybe just under.
Exactly.
It was packed. Hour, we talked about the hold my beer moment in the first, you know, 5-10 minutes. And, you know, one of the benefits, and I think we've talked about this with WWDC, and it will likely be the same, is that without the live sort of portions, it means that everything is trim. There's no mistakes. There's no, whoops, the software did something bad. Whoops, you know, Wi-Fi was bad. And there's kind of also, even though they brought in third-party developers, like for the, you know, Divinity, Original Sin, and other folks, they don't have the, all right, let's just bring this entire presentation to a grinding halt for 10 to 15 minutes as you watch this awkward demo occur. They don't have any
of that. And waiting for the people to walk on and off stage, too. That's the other thing, too, is like you know, there's a lot of sort of side stuff that has to happen. You have to mill into the room and find a seat and, you know, whatever, right?
Yeah. So it's crisper. So I really like what they're doing here. And even when we come out of this pandemic and they can do live events, I'm hoping they continue to push a lot of the pre-canned video and then do you know what being live and in person does and make that bigger, you know, hybrid part of the way it works.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if conferences in general are going to change, because I mean that was sort of the thing, was the mecca you would go to, and it's not just WWDC. There, you know, just about anything, any industry has some sort of conference where people get up and do talks, or you know, they have demos on the showroom floor, sort of thing, right? Like a Macworld used to do, right? You know, that kind of in our realm of things, the Macworld is gone, and WWDC never really sort of adopted that sort of style of conferencing. But it kind of begs the question, like 360 iDev this year is talking about, and at this point in time, they're talking about doing a hybrid conference where you can buy an online ticket, or you can actually go to Denver and be in person, right? So, and by the way, they just announced that the keynote speaker is Joe Chaplinsky, friend of the show, right? And so I assume Joe's going to be in Denver for the keynote, right? But kind of interesting to see that, is that going to be how we're going to have conferences in the future? Are they going to be hybrid experiences like that, you know, or are they going to be all online? Like, I mean, like, you know, so many conferences are happening in Europe this year that are all happening online. It doesn't matter where you are in the world, you can participate, right? So, you know, the economies of staying with this style. I mean, like you said, for Apple, they can put a lot more spit and polish on a presentation. The videos are much more succinct. They can drop a day's worth of content, you know, in the morning. And there's a lot of benefits to seeing WWDC evolve into this sort of the style it is now, right? Why would they go back? I mean, other than the actual in-person networking experience, right, which I still maintain is a big part of going to WWDC, right? It's one thing to be a developer sitting in your basement working on iOS. It's another to be in a room with 5,000 other people doing the same thing, right?
Yeah, I think the networking and festival celebration aspect is something we cannot have with a virtual event. So I don't want to see that go away long term. But I do like the crispness. Like, let's look at it this way. Like, I appreciate the fact that Apple was able to trim this down to just the bare essentials, get everything out there that you truly want to do. When you think about it, it really could be the opposite, right? Like, normally they would have to tell the press well in advance, hey, there's going to be an event, so that people could come from all over the country, all over the world, and sit there in a conference center to see, right? So there's like a is it plausible for people to fly in sort of thing. That doesn't apply here, right? Apple could say, hey, guess what? This morning we're going to have an event. And if you're a serious journalist, you're going to attend. You're going to clear your calendar, right? It's very easy to jump onto a live stream. There is low friction there. And since it is something that, you know, they also don't have to worry about people leaving and getting back home and jet lag and flying, there is no reason why this event couldn't be 8 hours. Why not? We're Apple. We're mad with power and high on our hubris. You're going to watch this anyways, because we know that you have to get the media stories, right? Here's a 2-hour demo for Minecraft. You're going to have to watch it and wait, because we know you want to see what the new iPhone product is, right? Like, I appreciate the fact that even though they could hypothetically make it less content packed and less dense, they actually have made it denser and crisper and tighter.
Well, I mean, what's missing though from this particular event was the white room. Remember that white room that Mark was at De Anza College that was at, Mark, where they had the white building that they threw up? Well, so after this presentation, normally all the, you know, the Randy Ritchies and the Jim Del Rumpels and all that kind of stuff would go into a room, and they would be in the same room with the new iMacs and the new iPad Pro and the AirTags, and they would be giving us, you know, their hands-on reviews of what they saw, right? That's missing now. I mean, not to say that, you know, Apple's not going to ship them review product, right? But that kind of, you know, hands-on experience that we would get, you know, sort of that after the event, like after the presentation kind of thing, right? That seems to me that's missing from this particular file of event, right?
For sure. And that also gives you the alternative view of, well, how big is this thing? You can see people next to it. What does the color really look like? Okay, well, it's not in a well-lit studio. It is whatever this person's iPhone was able to take. It gives you some contrast, like, oh, it's not as much contrast, or it's not as bright, or it's darker than I thought. There's all sorts of things you can infer from those sorts of hands-on in the field pictures that are, to your point, still missing.
How many neutron stars does an M1 chip weigh, you know?
Watching somebody do the world's strongest person sort of thing, of like, you know, picking up stones and flipping logs and stuff.
Yeah, interesting. All right, well, so we move on to our picks.
Sure.
Yes. All right. You want to go first? I'm going to go first. I'm going to go first.
I guess I'm going to do mine, because you talked about the AirTag accessory. So as we mentioned in the show, there's no strap or keyring or anything that comes with your AirTag. So you might buy Apple's. You could also buy some from Belkin. It's got a keyring and a strap. Nomad has its own keychain, but also has a sports glasses, sort of a wraparound necklace sort of thing. So you don't lose your glasses and they're accessible. There's ruggedized ones from Spigen. Hermes, man, this is a whole different class of person who buys these. So I know Hermes stuff is expensive, but when you're talking $299, $349, and $449 for just a tiny little keyring, luggage tag, bag charm kind of thing for your $30 AirTag, that's a flex for your dollars. Of course, Apple has its leather key loop, polyurethane, kind of like a sport band. Moment has probably the most interesting one in this list, where they have like this little fabric curved surface mount that has a, you know, stickiness in it, and you put the AirTag inside and you slap it on the side of your car. So the dude wears my car.
I like the aesthetic of the duct tape, though. That sounds more like it to me.
Duct tape. Yeah. So check out this page. It'll be the link will be in the show notes for those of you driving at home. Tons of options here for accessorizing your AirTag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you can get the polyurethane one, like you said, from Apple. But the leather one just seems to be more polyurethane. You kind of wonder, like, are we talking like plastic bag quality or the story here, right? So,
yeah. I wonder if it's going to feel like the, you know, fluoroelastomer style that you've got for, I mean, I would just think naturally, oh, they'll just make it from the same exact material as the watchbands. It, from the photo, looks like it could be the watchband. It is notably $29. So if you buy one AirTag and one Apple AirTag loop to go with it, you're in for another $29.
Well, both the leather loop, Apple AirTag leather loop, and the leather key fob thing are both available in product red too, which again will keep Carol happy. So that's good. It's funny, like, you know, I think we started to see the accessories come out, you know, 24 hours before the event was announced. So it was kind of they stole the thunder away from this particular thing as well, right? So
As the, I don't know who it was, but like the Walmarts and Targets of the world start putting the products on the accessory products on their respective pages.
Yeah, sure. Well, so So my first pick here is a thing called the Kensington Studio Dock for iPad Pro and iPad Air 4, which I assume also works with the new, shiny new one. I'm just going to do a quick search here so I can get a better page because I've got a YouTube video that's popping up here. I'd rather have just a page you can look at. Yeah, so this is a kind of a cool device. It's a stand. It's expensive. I mean, it's around the price of the Magic Keyboard, but it doesn't have a keyboard. But it's almost like the stand for the Pro Display XDR. It's got a magnetic thing you snap your iPad to, and it has a rotatable mount, so it's very much like an iPad or an iMac table or stand. You know, it's got a flat section and then it sticks up, and then the iPad is at an angle, and you can have it, you know, portrait or landscape mode. It plugs into the USB port on the back, so it can actually charge and has interfaces to it. It has like other ports that you can add to it, so as well as, you know, through the stand charging like the iPad, like the current one does. But it's also got on the bottom of it, it's got like a magnetic charging area, so you can put your watch down on it and your almost like the AirPower. Remember that mythical AirPower product? You can charge your phone and your watch side by side on the bottom of this thing. And I think the ports, I just want to check the ports here. I believe it's got two USB ports. I think it had an SD slot on it as well, but yeah, card reader. Yeah. So I mean, you know, so it's kind of a nice dock for your put your iPad into. Not inexpensive. It's $399 listed here on the Kensington store. So, but anyway, it's kind of an interesting thing. So I have a video on it and sat and watched it for a bit. So it's kind of a interesting choice if you want to look at something for the iPad Pro or iPad Air 4 in your world. It's cool. And what's my, you know how Mark doesn't like third-party products. What's my pet peeve, honey? The Death by a Thousand Cuts subscription services?
Yeah, but before we go there, I'm kind of curious because when I was hearing you talk about this as like this dock that you use for, you know, your iPad being your iPad. Primary device, it also seems like it'd be really good when you wanted to use your iPad as like a sidecar mode because it's also got the chargers, the wireless chargers. I'm like, oh yeah, I can see that being on my desk. Put it on the side, throw my iPhone, throw AirPods, Apple Watch would be nice if we were going to go there and put that on the side and don't even have to think about them and then use Sidecar to extend what my monitor is doing. Like, is it capable of doing that as well? Or?
I think it actually might actually have that built in because they show a picture in the video and there's a picture on the site of a lady in front of her. I think it actually drives an extra monitor. It has an HDMI port on it, right? So I believe this is either a way you can drive another monitor or you can use it as a monitor on another device.
I can understand.
This is what it was. The ports on the back, it has Ethernet as well. I forgot about the Ethernet jack, gigabit Ethernet, right? It's got a 3.5 minutes. Remember audio jacks? Remember those things? It's got three USB-C ports on the back, right? So it creates more ports for your iPad to plug in things as well, right? Yeah, there is a video mode. I'm trying to remember. Take your video beyond the iPad with support for a single 4K HDMI 2.0 video. So I think you can have an external monitor. That's interesting. But yeah, you can obviously use it for your sidecar deal, like you said, right?
I mean, I get the use case of, oh, I want to have my iPad as the main computer. I want to hook it up to a larger monitor. I totally get that. Not denying that case. That's not my use case. Like, I wouldn't use my iPad as my main device. That's just not the way I live my life. But I could see, oh, I would like to have my iPad in a nice, stable area as something to use for a sidecar. And as long as that space is already being used, you know, on my desk, sure, it would be nice to be able to charge my iPhone and other, you know, wireless charging devices under there. So I think it's a pretty solid combination there.
Yeah. I'm looking on the website. It says sold out too.
Even at the high price that we mentioned, people are like, gimme, gimme, gimme. So see, it's got the right idea there.
I have it. Yeah. And anyway, so like I was saying, my favorite thing is my Death by a Thousand Cuts is the idea of subscriptions. And so I saw a developer post something. This is a new app that he posted on the show. I should go find out what his name is. But anyway, it's called Subs, S-U-B-S. And it basically lets you keep track of your subscriptions. questions. And what's nice, it's from Vladimir Grashkin. Sorry, buddy. That's how I read your name. anyway, so what it does is it lets you put in individual subscriptions into here. And then, you know, you put like a frequency when it renews, like monthly or 6 months or whatever. So for instance, I'm looking right now, we've got our Fireside subscriptions coming up. I got my Apple One coming up on the 24th. I have my Bell Internet's coming up. I have my Visa's are due, you know, and so I can put in any kind of things in here. I put in Amazon, my Amazon Prime. I put my Tunnel Bear subscription in here, any number of things, and including my setup one. And then it also gives you analytics in terms of what your overall pay price is. So it shows your costs over the next 12 months, over the next year. You can sort of get an idea of how much you're going to be spending in your subscription. So on average, my subscriptions per month are $700 a month, which is nice to know rather than just kind of, you know, doing math on the back of an envelope or whatever. So it tells you how many subscriptions you have in the month and that coming up. So it's a really nice little app. There's a premium service. I lucked in and got in early, so I have the premium purchase version. But yeah, it's a good little app. It's, you know, been updated a few times since I've installed it, and yeah, I like it a lot. You can put in your default currency, like in my case, Canadian dollars, although I do have some US subscriptions. It'll send out a notification at the prescribed time, so I've got mine set for 10 a.m. And I also can put in my default payment methods, which card I like to use more than not. And you can also protect it with Face ID, right? So if you're concerned about privacy or people seeing what you're spending your money on. But yeah, I can see from here very quickly where the money is going. So it's nice. Dubs.
That's cool. It's got widgets as well, and the notifications is pretty nice to let you know, hey, I'm just looking at their app store thing. Like, hey,
yeah,
your trial period is ending, so you're going to have to pony up money and it's going to be paid from this card on this date. Cancel if you want.
Yeah, and I mean, it automatically it puts in artwork for specific things, but you can, you know, upload a custom logo if you want, if you put your own one in. So yeah, and it's got the today widgets, like you said. Yeah, it runs on iPad too. I hadn't realized that. I wonder if they sync. Check that out. But yeah, really cool little app. He's got lots of good ratings on it. So far, not a bad for a first attempt. All right. Well, I guess that's it for another week, okay? So hey, how many people want to get in touch with you? Where would they find you?
I'm on the internet as Dev with a Hair.
On the internet, generally.
On the internet.
Going to Google and type that?
You know, I usually say I'm on Twitter as at Dev with a Hair, but you know what? It's actually true on GitHub as well. So pretty good chance if you go to Dev with a Hair, like devwithahair.com, et cetera, like there's pretty good chance that's me. I'm not going to confirm that it's me, just in case there's some imposter out there that's doing nefarious things. Please don't send me your angry messages. But yeah, probably a pretty good chance. So I'm on Twitter as at Dev with a Hair. That's the easiest way.
All right. And Mark, if people want to find you on the internet, where do they look?
Try markr at smetsoft.com.
All right. And my name is Timitra, T-I-M-M-I-T-R-A, on most things, but I tell people to go to Twitter because that's where I probably pay the most attention. So until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
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 This has been another episode of the More Than Just Code podcast. If you want to find out more about the show, you can visit the More Than Just Code website at mtjc.fireside.fm. There you can find a summary and show notes of each episode. We list links to the apps, code, and news that we mentioned on the show. If you like the podcast, tell your friends, leave a comment on the website, or write a review on iTunes. And please recommend us in your favorite podcatcher. All of these things help others find out about the show. We really appreciate your help with spreading the word. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'd love to hear from you, so use the hashtag AskMTJC and we may mention you on the show. Friends of the show can also join us on the podcast Slack channel. Once again, the podcast Twitter account is at MTJC_podcast. Please consider supporting the show by pledging any amount on patreon.com/MTJC. Every dollar pledged helps a lot. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
I don't know if you heard, Mark, but Roger Waters has rescheduled his...
Yeah, I know. I've been getting ads for... a 2022 show that they want me to buy tickets for now.
Oh, you didn't buy it? I already bought two tickets, and I forgot. I was telling John and Jaime that I'd forgotten what shows I had lined up, right?
Mm, yeah.
Yeah. I had to cancel some of them. I think I had Steely Dan, and I had James Taylor. Finally got a chance to see him, but then, of course, pandemic hit.
Yep. So what was the last show you went to?
I think it was that Danforth Music Hall. I think it was those guys from England who had seen
before. Those guys from England? Yeah.
Yeah, those guys. What are they called? Hang on one sec. Let me log into Setlist and tell you.
Oasis?
No.
Culture Club?
No, not those guys.
Millie Vanilli?
Wait, did I log in? Hold on here.
Nickelback? Are they from the UK? They probably are. I don't know.
Sorry, what?
Are Nickelback from the UK?
No, they're Canadian.
They're Canadian. Oh.
Canada's own.
Sorry. Good Lovelies is the last people I saw. Black Keys, I saw it at Scotiabank. Mm. This one I saw those other guys. Struts. No, okay. Struts, I saw them back in September. Yeah, December, we went to a Christmas show, Carol and I, at the Danforth Music Hall, just before all hell broke loose.
I actually went to a show the night before we went into work from home here. It was Wishbone Ash. And so a year ago, just over a year ago, March, the night before we started to shut down, I went to a show the night before. Mm-hmm. So at least I, you know, went out with a bang before a year of doing nothing.
Yeah. Have you had vaccine number two yet?
I did. Yeah, this week. Yep.
Oh, really? Okay.
So I'm good to go.
Well, you're good not to get sick, you mean?
Right. Well, yeah, sure.
You're not impervious to COVID. No, that's you're just true. Not going to end up in the hospital.
Did you have your second shot?
I have not had my second one yet, no.
Wait, I thought you got Johnson & Johnson. There is no second shot for you.
No, I got AstraZeneca.
AstraZeneca? Okay. One of the other one-shot ones. Yeah.
Oh? No.
Is Johnson & Johnson the only single shot? I thought AstraZeneca was
also. Yeah.
Okay, got it. We've got my appointment tomorrow, which is first, which is good.
Oh, really?
Mm. How long do they make you wait, Tim, between shots for AstraZeneca? Because it seems like I thought you got yours before me.
I did. I think it's 45 days or 4 to 6 weeks or something like that. But yeah, the challenge with us is getting stock, right? Because we don't make them in Canada, so it's hard for us to get them, right? So, I'm not sure. I have to check and see when I got my. Oh, I can check on my app. I should be due any day. I mean, I think I'm technically eligible to get it now, right? So.
Oh, so you don't make an appointment?
Yeah, I don't know if
the time that you got your first shot. That's how they do it here.
What's that? You don't make an appointment?
No, you do make, when you get your first shot here, you make an appointment for your second shot.
Oh, yeah. No, they didn't do it that way with us. I went on the very first day, though, so maybe that's why.
So as far as I know, it's become relatively easy now to get a shot around here, which is good. Pretty much everyone I know has gotten their first one.
Yeah, they're starting to do the stories about vaccine hesitancy, so the rate in the United States as a whole is going down because of, you're pretty much hitting the folks who are the easiest to hit, the people who are highly motivated to get it, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And now we're with the folks who are going to be more challenging to convince for various reasons. Some of it political, some of it, racial history, and some of it just people not trusting. These vaccines are under special order, right? They're not, I think they're perfectly safe, of course, but they're not under the normal process, right?
Right.
Which is why they had to pause the Johnson & Johnson one, given that, like, well, the special order says we have to know all the side effects, and if there's a new one, then you have to stop using it until we see what those are, look at the data, and expecting on Friday to have a new order that says, okay, here you go, start using again, but let people know about the side effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm at 5 weeks now, I guess. Of course, you know, it snowed here this morning, so my furnace is...
Yeah, I know. I've been hearing about that. Everyone that I know from Toronto is posting Facebook or whatever, or Slack.
Well, it's not like we didn't know. They told us it was going to snow on Tuesday, right? So, no surprise.
Yep.
You know, but it was a bit of a interesting morning. I took a picture. Well, I posted it on Slack, right? So, if you saw it this morning.
I did see it.
Yeah, and the snow was, like, pretty stuck on. Like, it was not, like, you know, it kind of piled on all the trees. It didn't quite, you know, disappear right away. So
is it sticking, or is it just kind of melting away?
No, it's all gone. It's all melted.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the dog's disappointed. He loves eating the snow.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Yeah. Does he like the yellow snow?
He stopped to sniff the yellow snow. Yeah. He does, definitely. He's into the yellow snow for sure.
You know what Frank said about that, right?
Yes, yeah. We refer to it as reading the newspaper as he goes over his walk. He has to stop and sniff where all the other dogs have been. Mm. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, if he doesn't like the dog that was there, he has to pee on top of where the dog was.
Right.
Establish dominance.
Did Apple ever use the Rolling Stones song for a Colors Mac commercial?
Cars?
Huh?
They used
Colored Mac. She's a Rainbow. Did they ever use that?
Yeah, they used that for the the colored Macs when they first came out.
Okay, yeah, I thought so. Yeah,
it's like a rainbow. Yeah,
that song popped into my head as I saw iMac in colors. So I'm like, why did that happen?
Oh, yeah,
and that's why.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, maybe I'll save my comment for the show about the yellow iMac, but we'll come back to that one.
Tim, you're the editor. You can make this any part of the show you want.
Yeah,
I know. But
you can throw it in as a non sequitur. Like, what? They were talking about snow in Canada. Why did they suddenly talk about this?
Wait, what? I'm just kind of waiting to see if my furnace is going to turn off. Hang on a sec. It'd be that cold in the house. It doesn't feel that cold.
I'm in shorts because it's high 60s, low 70s, I think. Actually, wow. I don't know the temperature. 67?
Yeah. Well, I was wearing socks for most of the week. Yeah, it's already 18.5 here, so it should go off anytime soon. I guess we'll just dive in. My problem to edit it, right? Yep. Can you hear the white noise in the background?
No, nope.
I don't hear it. I don't on mine. But we know that Zoom is always kind of questionable for that.
Oh, yeah.
You'd have to try recording yourself and listening to yourself locally to see if your microphone.
Well, I don't see the meter moving at all on my recording on my end. And this mic's pretty good, but I can hear the, you know, like, because I'm monitoring everything, and I can hear it through the headphones. All right. Anywho, alrighty. Yeah, 326, right?
I believe so. Looking at the website, 325 is the last one I saw. I'm double checking because we had the oddity.
Well, don't forget, I do the website too, so I could screw that up, right?
Well, okay. Now you got me wondering. Let me double check.
Now a tinge of doubt comes into his mind. No, it is 326, you're right.
Yeah, because I was like, I have to check out the saved copies I have in Dropbox. So I tend to be pretty good about that.
Do no exciting politics happening in the States?
Should probably go off the air for that one.
Oh, really?
Going that route.
Oh.
So yeah. Maybe let's go ahead and do that. Let me stop my quick time.
All right, well, let's say goodbye. Bye.
Oh, yeah, bye. Did you not say that at the end? I thought you did. Maybe I
did. No, I meant for the after show part.
Okay,
hang on.
All right, let me stop everything and see.
And the dog's here to go.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.